Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
Construction of the Second Avenue subway on the east side of New York City, a project that has been discussed for 75 years, began in April of 2007 and is scheduled for completion in December of 2016.
This subway will consist of 2 miles of tunnels under Second Avenue from 125th Street in the north to the Financial District in Lower Manhattan. Here to talk with us about this long-awaited and very important addition to the New York City subway system is Peter Caffiero, who's Chief of Operations Planning for the Metropolitan Transportation Authority of New York City. Peter, thanks for talking with us this morning.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So can you tell us a little bit about the history of this project and why there is a need for yet another north-south subway in Manhattan?
Well, as you said, this has been a line that's been talked about for a very long time. Before there were subways in New York, there were elevated lines, and there were two on the east side, one on 2nd Avenue, one on 3rd Avenue. That was in the late 1800s that they were constructed. The subway that exists now, the 4, 5, and 6 train that run on the Lexington Avenue subway line, was constructed, part of it beginning in 1904 as the first subway in New York, and then the northern section of it was completed in 1918. Over the years, in the 30s and 40s, the elevated lines were removed, actually around World War II and shortly after. So we have only the one rapid transit corridor in Manhattan on the east side. It's an area that's gotten very densely developed. In fact, the development expanded after the elevated lines were removed. There was always that anticipation that a second corridor would be built. But for a number of reasons, starting with the Depression and World War II and various fiscal constraints after that, the line was basically not constructed. And the current 4, 5, and 6 trains are among our most overcrowded lines in the system, have both at station level and on the train significant capacity issues, delays every day because trains are crawling through stations as their train in front is waiting at the next station to load and unload a very crowded train. And so there's long travel times as well as crowding and the inability to handle any additional growth. So starting in the 1920s, there were proposals for lines for Second Avenue subway. Construction started in the 1970s, and actually a few segments were built, largely shallow, the old cut-and-cover construction, and largely between stations that were planned at the time. But in the early 1970s, there were New York State and New York City both had financial constraints and fiscal problems, and construction stopped. So we picked up that project essentially about 15 years ago and began looking at what we could do to try and make use of the existing tunnels and try in a 21st century environment start construction of a new rapid transit line that would relieve the crowding conditions on the existing line on Lexington as well as provide better access farther east in the Second Avenue corridor.
And I'm going to ask a lot more questions about the digging of the new line, but first I'm just curious. You had mentioned two elevated lines that were taken down around the time of the end of World War II. And do you know why they were taken down? And has anyone regretted taking them down since?
I think certainly people have regretted them. But for the most part, in that time period, elevateds were viewed as a negative, dark and noisy and hindering development. So there was a sentiment to remove them, as well as support columns were interfering with traffic. So as the nation became more pro-auto traffic, that was perceived to be a problem. There was always the intent to replace it with an underground line, and it just never happened. It did, though, result in a significant loss of capacity in that corridor.
It's interesting. We're broadcasting out of Chicago, where there's elevated trains all around, and I never thought of those disadvantages of elevated trains. I'm always happy that I'm not underground when I'm on an elevated train.
Well, I think the whole view of cities has changed over time, too. We certainly still have elevated lines in New York City and outside of Manhattan, and the neighborhoods around them had been blighted in the past, but a large part have come back, and they're pretty strong neighborhoods now, too. So
where does this connect in to the rest of the subway system?
Part of the construction that was built in the 70s, there were several tunnels that were built that didn't connect anything and are just basically sitting there awaiting something to come along. But there was an east-west line that was constructed along 63rd Street in East Midtown, just the northern border of Midtown and the Upper East Side, that connects into two of our existing north-south trunk lines on 6th Avenue and 7th Avenue on the one end, on the west end. And on the east end, one branch was to go up 2nd Avenue and the other continued in a new tunnel into Queens. The bulk of that was completed in the late 1980s and opened in 1989. And currently the F train, the F route from 6th Avenue runs through that out into Queens. But there's an entire second half of the 63rd Street and Lexington Avenue station that most of our customers have never seen, because in 1989 they constructed a removable wall down the middle of the platform to basically isolate that section. And that's the section that was designed to have the 2nd Avenue line from the north feed into it and then head down the west side. So the first segment that we are constructing of 2nd Avenue, you mentioned in the opening piece that the plan ultimately is to go from 125th Street in East Harlem down to the Financial District in Lower Manhattan. But we've divided the project into multiple segments to really facilitate both the funding and construction of it. So what's actually funded and in construction right now is what we call Phase 1, which starts at that 63rd Street connection into the rest of the system, completes that station at 63rd and Lex, and then curves up north on 2nd Avenue and has three new stations, one at 72nd and 2nd Avenue, 72nd Street, the second one at 86th Street, and the third one at 96th Street. And the north of 96th Street is one of those existing tunnel segments that was built and not finished in the 70s. We'll tie into that and use that actually to store trains initially. And should we obtain funding in the future to continue going north, then that would be part of that already constructed.
So which part of that, when Phase 1 is done, which part will be functioning, will be open to riders?
Be open to riders as far as 96th Street, but the tracks will go as far as 105th Street, which is just below the point of the next planned station north of there.
So it'll be from 96th Street and then go over to 63rd?
Right. So the train will start at 96th. It'll make the two additional new stops at 86th and 72nd, and then turn west along 63rd Street and stop at the existing station that we're expanding at 63rd Street and Lexington Avenue, a new entrance at 3rd Avenue that we're also building that was planned into the original station but not finished. And there you'll be able to transfer to the F train if you want to go to the lines it goes to. But the trains from 2nd Avenue will then continue from there through a tunnel that was completed in the 80s but not normally used for service. That the next stop would be 57th and 7th Avenue, which is, if you look at a New York subway map, it's the start of the yellow lines, the NQ and R train go through there. So it would continue down that line through Times Square, Herald Square, Union Square, some pretty big destinations, and then out into Brooklyn. One of the things that this does, which is actually fortuitous, is it connects the Upper East Side. Instead of just a pure north-south alignment that will ultimately be the line, this first phase will go from the Upper East Side over to West Midtown. So it's connecting a very densely populated and growing area in the Upper East Side and East Harlem to the area that's been the fastest growing part of the business district in the west side of Midtown, Times Square, and points west of that. And then the shopping areas at Herald Square and then down to Union Square, which has also developed as a fairly significant destination in the last 15 or 20 years with a lot of new tech kind of businesses and just a growing connection to lots of parts of the city. So we see a lot of potential for ridership being diverted to this line and growing along this line, even though it's a relatively short segment of new construction.
So will it, for future phases, go further south on 2nd Avenue?
That's the plan that we laid out in the studies and planning efforts that were done before we started construction on Phase 1. We laid out the entire line through the environmental process and through preliminary engineering so that we are ready to go for additional phases when and if funding becomes available for that.
And the new tunnels that you're going to be digging, is this going to be cut and cover? Or are you going to be boring them with some kind of enormous machine?
That was the big change that in technology that really occurred from the time this line was originally planned and conceptually back in the 20s. up through the 60s, the basic subway technology was where you could to be shallow and avoid rock. And if you had to be in rock, you were drilling and blasting it out of the way. Most of New York City subways are built that way and are fairly shallow, close to the street. It has a lot of impacts when you construct, obviously, the neighborhoods and businesses, but it's becoming increasingly hard now and expensive because of all the telecommunications that's immediately below the street. So there's a lot of reasons to avoid that first stretch where we can. And starting in the 60s, tunnel boring machines for hard rock were developed. In fact, 63rd Street tunnels, parts of them were the first ones in New York to use that technology. And now machines that can go through softer ground have also been developed. So as we've laid out the entire alignment, we generally try to use those machines where we could. And in this first phase, that's really from 63rd Street up to about 92nd Street. At 92nd Street, the rock dives very deep. Most of, take a step back in terms of looking at the geology of Manhattan. You can tell where the rock is pretty close to the surface by just looking at where the tall buildings are. In lower Manhattan, it's very close to the surface, and then the bedrock dives fairly deeply in that section between lower Manhattan and Midtown. And then it's pretty close to the surface all the way through Midtown and up as far as 92nd Street or so on the east side, and then it goes very deep again. So we have a transition point around 92nd Street. That was also where the tunnel had been started in the 70s at 99th Street. So from 92nd to 99th, we're transitioning, we're constructing the 96th Street station, and all of that is cut and cover. That's actually going on right now.
I just wanted to ask, if I may have gotten this wrong, but and it's a little counterintuitive. It sounds to me like it's easier to use the boring machine when you're going through rock and you need to cut and cover when it's soft ground?
It's most problematic when you're going back and forth. You want the machine to be designed for the type of material it's going through. There are machines now that can go back and forth, but they're not as efficient and they're more expensive than just having one type or another. So you also need a place to start the machines, and we needed to construct the station in that case by cut and cover because we were connecting into the existing tunnel. We actually looked at what if you didn't even connect to the existing tunnel and just said, well, sorry, but it's in the wrong alignment. But there's that tunnel supported on piles going way down, and so having a boring machine north of there wouldn't have worked either. So we had to open up the ground at that site for a whole lot of reasons. So it made sense to use that as what we call the launch box, where we did cut and cover, dug out enough space to lower the tunnel boring machine into the ground, and then we ran it south from there in two separate tunnels. So we did it all the way down, then brought it back and did the second tunnel. So most of the tunneling south of 92nd Street has been done using these tunnel boring machines. That was actually completed last year. So that tunnel's all been built. And now what we're doing is hollowing out the station areas and coming up to the street at stations and ventilation and facilities. And so there is some activity at street level around the stations at 72nd and 86th. But a lot of this line was constructed without people even knowing it was happening because it was with the boring machines underground.
So where you are penetrating from the surface for the box, for the tunnel boring machine, and for the stations that you're describing, what are the special challenges that you face in building in the middle of Manhattan?
Well, the challenges are huge, and that's translated into the cost of doing anything in Manhattan. It's a very densely populated area. That's everybody kind of, I think, understands that. But unlike Chicago, there are no back alleys serving businesses. So all the deliveries have to happen on the avenue or on the street. So if you're taking out part of the street, you have to accommodate the deliveries. Manhattan is, of course, an island, and the only way you can get on or off it are either on bridges or tunnels, most of which have restricted clearances. So the type of construction equipment or trucks that can come in or leave are limited in size and not as efficient as you would do in a project elsewhere. They get caught in traffic like everything else, so that adds to the challenge. And there's no rail freight access into Manhattan, so you can't use trains to get the dirt out, for example. You're in an environment where during the daytime you don't want to interfere with traffic and business, but at night there are residents in the area who don't want you working into the overnight hours if you can avoid it either. So there are those huge challenges. I mentioned the utilities below street level, which are an amazing spaghetti of water, gas, sewer, and telecommunications that have to be relocated. There are artifacts of prior land uses that we encountered. Of course, in an environmental process, we have to anticipate everything going back from, you know, potential Native American discoveries on forward, what we would do in any of those cases. But there's also just more mundane things, but still we have to deal with it. In the 90s, 100 years ago, there was a large brewery, and there were various subground support structures for that that were still in the way that were not really known about until we began opening up the street. There were the remnants of brewing process that were dumped there that created all kinds of issues with just clearing that out and making sure we didn't have a problem with rodents and others getting at, you know, access to the apparently a lot of hops that were dumped there 100 years ago and been sitting underground. So there's always challenges that have to be dealt with that you don't really anticipate. It's also hard to get as accurate a condition of the rock that you'd like, because we did a number of test borings vertically drilling down to see where the rock was and what the quality was, but it's hard to get those in the middle of 2nd Avenue because you're disrupting traffic while you're doing that. So we had relatively limited data points there, and it turned out that in some cases the rock changed dramatically over just a few feet, and so we ended up with having to adjust to some of those changing rock conditions to allow the tunnel boring machine to safely pass through.
So did you have good information, good intelligence on where the utilities were before you broke the surface?
Generally, yes. But again, in projects of this magnitude, there are always some level of surprises, and then there's always a negotiation with the utility companies in terms of what they would like to see versus what, you know, we would like to have the minimum amount of work and expense to keep them whole. In some cases, they're looking to replace very antiquated and old facilities and would love it if someone like us came along and did it for them. So there's a constant interaction back and forth on that is a challenge for any project of this size.
You mentioned one thing that caught my ear was you said something about Native American. Were you speaking of coming across artifacts that you'd need to dig carefully to protect?
Right. I mean, when you're doing I was involved in the environmental impact statement process throughout the development of this, and that's one of the things that any project has to be prepared to address. One of the interesting challenges here was just we had to find out which Native American tribe would have a historical connection to a point in the United States where they hadn't actually lived for centuries. So we have a process that should we find anything, it's extremely unlikely because of this land's been so developed over the years, but we have to have a whole process that was developed both with the approval of the federal government but also the New York State Office of Historic Preservation, as well as a process that involved the relevant Native American tribes on what to do if anything came up, as well as other potentially historic things that we might find. And so you do a survey of what's likely to be there or not. In some cases further down, and not on the segment we're doing now, but in segments lower in Manhattan, there are sites that were former cemeteries, but maybe 100 years ago, 150 years ago, the church owned that property, decided to sell that property. They, in theory, relocated the bodies out to some new cemetery further out, but you have to develop a process where if you end up finding something, you figure out how to handle that. So it's fascinating on just how the amount of detail and process that has to be gone through to sort of think of any contingency, but you do learn a lot about the history of the area you're going through in a project like this and what potentially is there.
Are you using any different construction methods to build the stations? Does the tunnel boring machine contribute to that, or do you have to go from the surface?
There are four stations in this new segment. One station was constructed, essentially the shell of it was constructed in the 1970s and 80s, and that's the one at 63rd Street. So that's just finishing off something that's already been really there. The one at station 96th Street is a relatively traditional, by New York standards, station that is a cut-and-cover, as I explained before, why it really needed to be, a cut-and-cover box that we will then outfit, you know, put a roof back on and a street over that, and then outfit the station. The two stations that are deeper in the rock are 86th and 72nd, and essentially what happens there is that first the tunnel boring machine came through, so we've just hollowed out the diameter of the tunnel, and then from there vertical shafts are blasted out from the street down to the station level, and then the rest of the station is mined out with drill and blast generally in this area. In addition, at 72nd Street, we had to carve out additional space for track switches and the junctions between the Phase 1 line, which curves to the west, and the eventual line heading further south. So we had to leave that provision in, and that was all blasted out.
Does the tunnel boring machine drill a tube large enough for dual tracks, or do you have to do it twice, go through twice?
No, and basically we have one that's it's about 20-foot diameter, and it, so that's large enough for a single track, and so we did two passes. There are some systems where they've chosen to have a very large machine that can have two tracks, but you're, you know, just based on the formula for the area of a circle, you're basically squaring the amount of rock you have to mine out to get that additional width, and it becomes prohibitive that way, as well as the general rule of thumb is that you have to leave about one diameter's worth of rock above you at a minimum, and so the larger the diameter, the deeper the tunnel would have to be.
About how deep underground are you for the tunnel?
It varies, but we're generally about 70 feet or so below ground.
And there's been incidents of flooding in some of the other New York subways when there's heavy rain or storm surges. Are you doing anything in this process to try and mitigate against that?
What we generally do everywhere else in terms of trying to, first of all, keep the water out, we did look at the 100-year floodplain. Obviously, the biggest concern would be a storm surge coming off the East River, particularly up at in the 90s, where that area, where the rock, if you remember before, I said the rock went very deep. That was because that was an old fault line and then streams and marshy area there. So you're relatively close to the river at that point. And so that would be the biggest concern. But we have made sure that the station entrances are high enough to keep out most of what we would find. And then we have pump facilities that are part of this project to be able to make sure that that doesn't happen.
So when is it going to be done?
Well, we're currently on track to complete it in late 2016. This first phase, the subsequent phases, as I said, aren't funded, so it's certainly something that we're always looking in the future to see what we can do, but right now there's no formal plans to keep going, and we're focused right now on just completing this first segment.
Is there ever a feeling when you describe all the difficulty involved in doing something like this that just after 2016 everyone might just want to take a breath and rest and not take anything else on for a little while?
I think there's a benefit from the momentum to keep going. If you do take a breath and rest, there's a higher likelihood of never starting up again. Having said that, there's also obviously, you know, we're very constrained financially, and our first priority is to make sure the existing system keeps functioning, and there's a lot of needs that we still have there to keep and bring into state of good repair some of our key systems, our signal systems, some of which are 70 years old, still need a lot of investment as well. The other aspect of that question, though, is the more you wait, the more difficult it becomes. If you just look back at the plans that were laid out in the 1970s, that before that construction stopped, there were at least two major pieces of legislation that passed subsequent to that. One was the Americans with Disabilities Act, and the other was changes to fire evacuation standards and ventilation. Both of them very good rules and certainly a lot of logic behind them, but that added significantly to the cost and challenges and space requirements that we're now dealing with. In addition, if you go back to the 1970s, you didn't have all this fiber optic cable under the streets that is much more expensive to move than the old telephone lines were. You had a lot less development in the east side back then, and there was more vacant space to work with and areas to work with. So each generation that you wait in a place like Manhattan, the harder, more difficult, more expensive it is to come along and build something new. And so I think if we're going to continue, the sooner we do it, the more likely it'll be that it will happen. It just gets more and more challenging the longer it goes.
Sounds very interesting. It sounds like a good feather in your cap to be in a leadership position on a project like this. I really appreciate your spending the time to describe the project to us. I wish you well, and I want to mark my calendar so that we can get out to New York and be among the first riders.
Okay. Love to see you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Peter.
Thanks.